60 Minutes, coming up next.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Tonight on this special edition of 60 Minutes presents Inside the Vatican. This holiday season, we once again introduce you to Pope Francis through some of his closest friends. From the woman whose children he baptized and calls every birthday.
I knew that he would phone me, but I didn't expect that he phoned me so quick.
To this man.
You are the Pope's rabbi.
Let us say so.
Rabbi Abraham Skorka has been a close friend of the Jesuit since he was an archbishop in Argentina.
I knew him very, very well. That he's a revolutionary.
We'll talk to President Obama about whether this revolutionary is influencing his politics.
Buonasera.
And we'll hear how seriously the Pope takes his position as successor to St. Peter.
When he met one day the people from Jesuit school, and there was a little girl that asked him, did you want to be a Pope? And he said, you have to be crazy to want to be a Pope.
We're about to visit a place few people have seen firsthand.
There's about 2 million printed books.
2 million printed books. The Vatican Library, a vast collection of historic treasures beyond compare.
Petro Episcopu.
The library's most valued documents go back almost 2,000 years, nearly to the time of St. Peter.
The name of God.
And from the same period, the Gospel of Luke and part of the Gospel of John.
In the beginning, it was the Word, and the Word was God.
Good evening. I'm Scott Pelley. Welcome to 60 Minutes Presents. Tonight, we take you inside the Vatican, where Morley Safer explores some of the treasures, secrets, and surprises of the Vatican Library. But we'll begin with Pope Francis, who made history again this month, helping the United States and Cuba establish diplomatic relations for the first time in more than 50 years. The Pope has a talent for bringing people together. You can see it even in how he signs his name. Popes have a special way, the name followed by PP, short for Papa, and the appropriate Roman numeral. But this Pope writes Francis, just Francis. Humility has made the former Jorge Bergoglio a star, and a lot of his fans aren't even Catholic. But don't mistake humility for weakness. Just plain Francis is also being signed on orders to transform institutions fossilized by tradition and stained by corruption. Last spring, when we first reported this story, we talked to some of the people who know Francis best, but don't ask them what he's likely to do next, because God only knows. In St. Peter's Square, March 2013, 100,000 faithful waited for a light to split the curtain. They'd adjusted their eyes to what they were accustomed to seeing, regal robes and a gold cross around the neck of a European. Instead, they saw an emissary from the New World with a world of new ideas.
He was just dressed so simply. There was no cape, there was no fur, there was no... And he was just standing there, and in a simple silver cross, evidently the one that he wore when he was in Buenos Aires.
Robert Mickens was among the believers in disbelief. He's an American journalist covering the Vatican.
And then he started by saying...
Buonasera.
Buonasera. good evening. Popes don't do that. They'd say, Laudator Jesus Christus or something like that. But the biggest thing was when he asked the people on the square to pray over him. Everybody keeps saying, pray for me. That's not what he said. He said, let's pause for your prayer over me. That's a blessing. And he put his head down. You could have heard a pin drop.
For Francis and the Vatican, that was the last quiet moment. Since then, the halls of St. Peter's have been ringing with commands. Insiders out, outsiders in, priests ordered from their cathedrals and into the streets. For Pope number 266, there are a lot of firsts.
Nobody's ever taken the name Francis. I mean, that's an extremely challenging program just in the name.
What did it mean to the church?
He took the name Francis from Francis of Assisi, who is probably the most beloved saint, among Catholics and especially non-Catholics, and, you know, had this great love for the poor, God's creation, nature, peace. And what we've seen is that he lives very radically, very simply, rather than some monarch, prince, or king, or monarch, pope.
His most radical decision came on his second day. He toured his 16th century palace looking like a home buyer whose realtor just didn't get it. In here, he'd be kept behind a barrier of minders and schedulers. So he chose freedom in a Vatican hotel where he lives and dines with everyone else. His room 201 is a key to the world. This leader of a billion Catholics demands to be in touch.
I knew that he would phone me, but I didn't expect that he phoned me so quick.
He phoned Elisabetta Pique 12 hours after his election. She's an old friend, an Argentinian journalist, and her children were baptized by Bergoglio.
2 days later was my birthday, and he phoned again. But in that sense, we have here the scandal of normality, because he's a normal man.
The scandal of normality.
Scandalous, checking out of a hotel, posing for a papal selfie, and standing in the rain.
We see this scandal almost every day. 10 days ago, when he went for a retreat, he wanted to go in the bus like the others, and he didn't want to go by helicopter or in his own car. This is why people love him, I think.
They loved him in a simple car last year in July, but it was frightening when Brazil's 130 million Catholics seemed to show up at once. Francis responded by rolling down the window.
A lot of people was afraid. He asked especially that he didn't want so much security, and he explained it very well. If I go to visit you to your house, do I go with in a box? A glass box? No. If I go to your house to visit you, I want to be with you, near you, and I want to touch you. And he said, I know that someone, there always can be a crazy one that would do something, but I prefer this craziness, to have this risk that there would be a barrier between me and the people.
That's physical courage. In the tradition of the Pope's religious order, the Jesuits, who call themselves soldiers of God. These days, Jesuits are also known for intellectual courage, battling over ideas.
I knew him very, very well, that he's a revolutionary. He is not a person who likes to go in the middle way. No, in the extremes.
To know the leader of the Catholic world, it's helpful to talk to a rabbi. Abraham Skorka of Argentina is an old, close friend.
You are the Pope's rabbi.
Let us say so.
They met while debating one of the greatest of all human conflicts, Argentinian soccer. Skorka's team often chokes in the clutch, so the fans have a nickname.
We received the name of chickens.
What? The chickens?
The chickens. Why? Not a lion, not a tiger, but a chicken.
Francis is a card-carrying member of a rival team. This is his actual membership card. His Holiness couldn't resist temptation, though, when he said this to Skorka.
I guess that this year we are going to eat chicken soup. Oh, I received that as an aggression, as a really aggression. But I understood that behind the joke was a message. Look, we can joke together. We can speak on the same level.
Las manos de Dios.
They did speak on the level in a TV series and a book they wrote together. After all, pontiff is Latin for bridge builder.
You learned that there could be conversation, common ground among the faiths.
Yes.
But soccer, no.
No, never.
Jorge Bergoglio took his vows to heaven as Argentina went to hell. In the 1970s, many thousands vanished in the dictatorship's mill of torture and death. Bergoglio helped hide opponents of the government. Still, Rabbi Skorka told us that Francis is troubled, like many in his generation, over whether he could have done more.
The Pope keeps telling everyone who will listen that he is a sinner, chief among sinners. Why does he say that?
Because he is showing a way. One of the great sins of the leaders throughout the world is that they used to appear before their people as perfect persons and perfect leaders. And he is teaching what a real leader must be.
We saw that lesson when the Pope met an Argentinian adversary. President Cristina Kirchner once called him medieval for opposing her plan for gay adoption and same-sex marriage. Watch what happens. She'll touch him and recoil, thinking it's not allowed. See how he reacts. It seems Francis has kissed the past goodbye.
To my eye, when you see photographs of Bergoglio as Archbishop in Buenos Aires, he looks like he has the weight of the world on his shoulders. He looks like a man who is tired. And now you see pictures of him as Pope. When he does have the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he is smiling and light, help me understand that.
He understood very, very well that his image must be an image of hope.
He understood how important it was that a tired old man didn't shuffle out onto that balcony.
Yes, that's so. He changed.
He's changing many things, including the ancient ritual of washing feet on Holy Thursday, as Jesus did with his disciples. With popes, they're almost always the feet of priests. But Francis cleansed and kissed teenagers in a criminal detention center. Two were women. Unheard of, and two in the group were Muslim. When traditions like that wash away so easily, people begin to talk, and there are some incredible Francis stories. There's the one about the Pope sneaking out of the Vatican at night behind the wheel of a beat-up old car to minister to the poor in Rome, and the one about him driving the same car to the airport to pick up an old friend. The trouble is, those stories and all of their variations, not true. The people who work closely with the Pope tell us that what he does do is pick up the phone and call a lot of people. It's a desk phone, not a cell phone. His emails and tweets, we're told, are sent by the staff.
Did he want to be Pope, in your estimation?
Well, he himself, when he met one day people from Jesuit school, and there was a little girl that asked him, did you want to be a Pope? And he said, you have to be crazy to want to be a pope.
It is all-consuming. At 78, he rises to every public audience, the blind, the deaf, the poor, the sick, the dying. Crazy, or maybe just an old Jesuit soldier embracing his final orders. When we come back, we'll hear from President Obama about his time last March with the Pope in Rome.
"60 Minutes," coming up after this short break.
Attention men, are you urinating often, waking at night to urinate? We want to send you a free bottle of Super Beta Prostate, made with a natural ingredient that supports healthy urine flow, bladder emptying, and is shown to reduce waking at night from the urge to urinate. You can try Super Beta Prostate free. Only pay shipping and handling. This free giveaway is available while supplies last. For details, just call 800-519-0814. That's 800-519-0814. Call 800-519-0814.
Your customers are your most valuable asset. So if you run a business that stores customer data, that is, personally identifiable information, including credit cards and social security numbers, you have to protect it, especially if you want to stay in business. Barracuda Networks has more than 150,000 customers worldwide who trust our security and storage solutions to do just that. Keep them open for business. Reclaim your network. Visit barracuda.com/open to learn more.
Last spring, when we first reported this story, Pope Francis was reading a prepared script about children and families when he stopped and did something that a pope has never done. Off the cuff, he took personal responsibility for the rape and abuse of children by priests. He said, quote, "I feel compelled to personally take on all the evil, to personally ask for forgiveness for the damage done." It was another advance from a pope of firsts. First from the Americas, first Jesuit. Before Francis was elected, many expected the cardinals to select a younger man for the job, but after nearly 2 years, it appears the 78-year-old Francis is equal to the task.
What did he inherit in the Vatican?
Oh, he inherited a mess.
Robert Mickens is an American journalist who's been covering the Vatican for more than 25 years.
He came in at a time when there was great scandal. There were documents being leaked in the press about financial corruption, cronyism. There were even some sexual misconduct that was in these documents that were leaked. So he had a very clear mandate from the cardinals that elected him: clean up the house.
He's cleaning with committees of cardinals and lay people, investigating sex abuse, the Vatican Bank, and reform of the ancient bureaucracy of the church itself, starting with the executive offices at headquarters, known as the Roman Curia, Latin for court.
He set up a council, a privy council of eight cardinals from around the world to advise him on reforming the Curia and governing the universal church. Really? Governing the universal church. Most people overlooked that. They thought he was going to come in and clean up the Vatican and reform the Roman Curia. Instead, what Francis has embarked upon is a reform of the governing structure of the church.
And the church that he dreams of looks like what?
A missionary church. A missionary church that shows the mercy of God. A church that's not wagging its finger at people, not scolding people, but is inviting people, walking with people, befriending people. He uses the word synod. Synod means walking with. That's not just for the church, but it's for all humanity. He's called the church a field hospital after a battle.
The battlefield wounded that Francis speaks of are Catholics harmed by the church and the wider world of the dispossessed. He said this about the media and public attention.
Questo passa oggi.
This is what gets through today. If investments in the banks and elsewhere drop a little, oh, tragedy, what can we do? But if people die of hunger, if they're sick, no, none of that gets through.
We're a sleeping giant. We are. The church is a sleeping giant.
To understand Francis, we went to one of the people he handpicked. The career of Gerald Lacroix of Quebec City is similar to the Pope's, leading through the slums of Latin America. The Pope has faith in Lacroix, and so made him one of his first new cardinals, although Francis didn't mention that to Lacroix before the announcement.
Most of the time, I guess, from what I've heard, 1 or 2 or 3 days ahead of time, they get a heads up, you know, get ready, the Pope will announce such and such a day. But this time, Francis decided to do things differently.
He seems to decide to do a lot of things differently.
Yeah, yeah. And it's challenging, but it's wonderful. It keeps us on our toes.
Lacroix found out about his elevation in a divine message written on a tablet. His iPad woke him, dinging with notes of congratulations. Later, he got a letter from the Pope.
The letter said this: "Now, you being named a cardinal, Gerald, is not a promotion, it's not an honor, and it's not a decoration. It is a call to widen your spirit and a call to serve."
The Pope has graced the covers of many magazines. There's even a magazine dedicated just to him now. But he has described all of this attention as, quote, offensive. Why do you think so?
I think maybe it's in a way to tell us it's not about me. Of course he's very popular. He's very attractive. He's such a joyful man. That in itself makes him a star. But what he's telling us down deep is, it's not about me. Turn to the Lord.
And turn to the people. One of the first things Francis asked Lacroix to do was administer a questionnaire to the parishes. The Pope wanted to know what people thought about same-sex marriage, contraception, and divorce.
So we need to look at reality. We need to look where people are at. And we need to look at the gospel and the teaching of our church and see how we can help people from where they're at to grow.
You are abundantly aware of the urgent concerns that many Catholics have about the sex abuse scandals, about financial scandals at the Vatican, about the role of women in the church. What are we going to see, in your estimation, from this Pope on those very important matters?
Just mentioning the sex scandal, excuse me, always touches me. Because of lack of coherence and because of sin, so many people have been hurt in the United States, in Canada, in many other parts of the world, and that is absolutely scandalous and acceptable. You talked about difficulties in economics and in the way we handle money, properties. He was right from day one very, very involved in making sure that those things change.
The Pope surprised people in a news conference when he said, if someone is gay and searching for the Lord and has goodwill, then who am I to judge him? The Pope has written that the Church has a false sense of security with, quote, rules that make us harsh judges. He asked, whom are we going to evangelize if this is the way we act?
This upsets a lot of very conservative Catholics because he's the one supposed to judge. You know, what he has done is he's opened up discussion in the Church. There has been no discussion on issues like birth control, about premarital sex, about divorced and remarried Catholics receiving the same. None whatsoever. There's been no discussion for the last probably 35 years on that. He's getting them to speak about it. Over the next 2 years, the Pope says, if there's opposition, if there people disagree, that's not a problem. We want discussion. That's something very, very new.
But on a couple of old controversies, Francis has closed discussion. Opposition to abortion will remain firm. He says the right to life is linked to every other human right, and the priesthood will remain male. What are Francis's limitations?
He's got to do some more with women, because they are more than half the church, and they are the ones that are effectively keeping the church, you know, up and running. But they are not at the heart of decision-making.
Francis's roadmap for the church is the first thing he wrote as Pope, called The Joy of the Gospel, emphasis on joy. He writes, an evangelizer must never look like someone who's just come back from a funeral.
Does he get a perverse pleasure out of tweaking all the protocols of the Vatican and breaking all the rules?
I wonder. I mean, I do. I think a lot of us do. He's just being himself. I remember about a month into the pontificate, a priest friend of his from Buenos Aires gave an interview and said, you know, I talked to him on the phone and I said to him, Jorge, is this not a problem that you're not living in the palace, that you're not wearing the red shoes? And he said to me, Pepe, if I did that, I'd look ridiculous. That's not me.
Truth is, the Pope loves a joke and His Holiness has a devilish wit. You can see it in the eyes after the gotcha punchline, and the mightier the audience, the sweeter the punch. In March, after meeting the Pope for the first time, President Obama spoke with us at the U.S. Ambassador's residence in Rome. He told us that Francis joked that for two men of great power, it was really young people who ordered them around.
Can you give me a sense of what it's like to be in the presence of Pope Francis?
He's a wonderful man. He projects the kind of humility and kindness that is consistent with my understanding, at least, of Jesus' teachings. His simplicity and his belief in the power of the spiritual over the material reflects itself in everything that he says and does. And I suspect, my sense is that he's a little bit uncomfortable with all the trappings of being Pope.
Embarrassed by them.
Well, you know, that's not his style. And that is part of why I think he has been so embraced around the world, because people get a sense that first and foremost he sees himself as a priest and as a disciple of Christ and as somebody who is concerned with the least of these.
What did the Pope say to you in that meeting that inspired you?
We spent a bulk of our conversation around issues of poverty and inequality, themes that he's been talking about quite a bit, and obviously issues that I care about deeply. The very poor finding fewer and fewer ladders to get into the middle class, youth unemployment high. These are chronic problems. What the Pope's able to do in a way that no politician can do is to shake people's conscience and to shine a light on the problem. It's our job to come up with policies to do something. What the Pope can do is to help mobilize public opinion.
But how practical is that? Stalin once said of the power of the papacy, how many divisions does the Pope have?
I'm a big believer in the power of conscience, the power of faith, the power of a message of hope. I think over time that's what moves history. Tanks and divisions and dollars and sense, all those things obviously make a difference. But ideas are the most powerful thing on earth.
The power of the papacy comes laden with 8 official titles. They start with the Grand, Bishop of Rome, Vicar of Christ, etc., etc. But the last is the most modest, Servant of the Servants of God. Maybe in titles, Francis looks to the book of Matthew. Let the last be the first.
One man in one little tiny place in the center of the city of Rome can't do everything, and no one should expect him to. But he is there as an icon, as the captain of the ship, in a sense. And now it's up to the rest of the church to get with this very challenging program. And any Christian that's not challenged, wherever you are, right, left, center, conservative, progressive, if you're not challenged by Pope Francis, as one of my colleagues recently said, you're not listening.
We're about to show you a place few people have seen firsthand, the Vatican Library, a vast collection of historic treasures beyond compare, founded over 5 centuries ago, when Europe was coming out of the Dark Ages. It was a period of so-called humanism, when the Catholic Church was open to new ideas in philosophy, science, and the human spirit. It's the Pope's library, but it contains much more than church documents. As Morley Safer reported 3 years ago, there are manuscripts going back nearly 2,000 years on music, math, warfare, and exploration, even cookbooks and love letters. The library is closed to the public, a place for scholars only, but the Vatican agreed to let Morley in to see some of the priceless artifacts of our collective past.
Welcome to the 15th century. In Rome, turn a corner and you bump into antiquity. A delicious mixed salad of present and past. We arrived at the Vatican to find a medieval costume parade in progress. What better way to begin a trek through history?
There's about 2 million printed books.
2 million printed books. And inside the library, the past surrounded us again as we were shown the magnificent building and its riches.
This is the Urbino Bible.
For instance, this spectacular Bible commissioned in 1476 by the Duke of Urbino.
He wanted to have a very fancy Bible.
There you go.
And this is what he got.
Library curator Timothy Jans tells us the Bible took years to make by hand, letter by letter, picture by picture.
Decorated with real gold.
It's just one of the library's 80,000 handwritten manuscripts from the ages before the printing press. Add to that those 2 million or so printed books, Christian and pagan, sacred and profane, in virtually every language known to man. There are thousands of prints and drawings. Windows on the past.
Questa è una moneta papale.
And a huge collection of ancient coins. This was the money of Palestine 2,000 years ago, including the kind of silver coins Judas was said to have been paid to betray Christ. Here is a map of the world, drawn 50 years before Columbus. At its edge, the Towers of Paradise. And an immediate bestseller, Columbus's description of his voyage to the New World, published in 1493. In a certain way, the library is kind of the attic of Western civilization.
That's so true, and it's like many attics. You know, you put things up all the time, you keep on pushing over boxes to make space for more things.
Father Michael Collins is an Irish priest who's written extensively about the Vatican, where the library's shelves, if you put them end to end, would stretch for 31 miles.
Is there anyone, any single person who really knows what the library holds?
Nobody knows exactly what's there, because it would be impossible for the human brain to understand, to remember the titles, who wrote it, when they were written.
It is quite a treasure of the humanity that you have here.
Monsignor Cesare Pacini presides over the library. Its great hall, essentially unchanged over the centuries, is a picture gallery of antiquity. Saints, philosophers, and depictions of the great libraries of the pre-Christian world. Babylon, Athens, Alexandria, a shrine to learning and to books.
There's one person who can actually take a book out of the library, correct?
Yes, the Pope can have every book in the library.
If St. Peter's Basilica represents the splendor of the church writ large, the library nearby is a testament to the monks and scribes who made magnificent miniatures in times past. Here, some devotional music commissioned by Pope Leo X, and the text of the Christmas Mass used at the altar by Alexander VI, both manuscripts 5 centuries old, written on parchment, treated animal skin.
You will often see the skin of sheep being used, sometimes goats.
Christopher Chalenza is a scholar who's often used the library. He says that writing on parchment was not only tedious, but expensive.
If a monastery wanted to produce a Bible that perhaps had 400 pages, it might cost you 400 sheep. It's an investment.
Beyond the academic work, did you ever just come here to hang out and flip through stuff and see what you might discover?
I think all of us have come here at one time or another with the hope of discovering something, having a general direction in which we're going, but not quite knowing where it will wind up.
You might find, as curator Adalbert Roth showed us, drawings of a German jousting tournament in 1481. Or an old cookbook telling us that Roman foodies in the 4th century dined on chicken, veal, seafood, pancakes in milk, and whipped pear cake.
How to hack away at your enemy's wall.
Or from an 11th century treatise on the art of war, a Byzantine soldier brandishing a flamethrower, something the Greeks invented 1,500 years earlier. Or Henry VIII's love letters to Anne Boleyn.
The letters are certainly among the most bizarre and unusual letters you'd expect to find in the Pope's archives.
There are 17 of them, handwritten by the King of England to the woman he would make the second of his six wives, and later have beheaded.
There's the little heart.
Henry signs his name with a heart, like a smitten schoolboy. He tells of his fervence of love, his great loneliness without her, wishing myself, he says, in my sweetheart's arms, whose pretty duckies I trust shortly to kiss. Duckies being a term in Henry's day for, well, use your imagination.
What is that doing in the Vatican Library?
We don't know how they ended up here in the Vatican. It may be that some spy, maybe one of my priestly predecessors, may have stolen these letters and brought them to Rome to present in the case if a trial was made for Henry's request for divorce.
But the church refused to let Henry divorce Catherine of Aragon so he could marry Anne. He married her anyway, broke with Rome, and took control of the Church of England. The country was largely converted to the Protestant faith.
This is one of the moments in the 16th century that leads to the fracturing of Christianity and to much of the bloodshed and the wars that especially the later 16th century was known for.
As man explored the planet, a scientific revolution was also underway. By the mid-17th century, navigators had mapped much of the world in remarkable detail.
Rio de Janeiro, Cusco, Mexico City.
Galileo turned his eyes and his telescope on the heavens. Here, from 1612, are his drawings of sunspots. For his insistence that the sun is the center of the universe and the earth moves round it, the church branded him a heretic.
The Pope at the time, Pope Urban VIII, who was a very good friend of Galileo, said to him, look, you know, I agree with you, you're right, but I can't approve of this because I'm the Pope, and if I go against this, it looks as if I'm going against the Bible and I'm going to shake to the foundation the belief of the world and the world's Christians, not just Catholics.
Just 380 years later, in 1992, Pope John Paul II apologized for the Galileo affair. His successor, Benedict XVI, has sought middle ground in the centuries-old skirmishes between the church and science. In a sermon, he said, even the Big Bang theory of the creation of the universe is not in conflict with faith because God's mind was behind it.
This is the tricky part.
And backstage at the Pope's library, science is brought to bear on crumbling books as restoration workers deal with water damage, mold, and the ravages of time.
It seems endless, this work.
Yes, obviously.
Angela Gaetan and the others go inch by inch, patching and strengthening ancient pages, scratching off paste put on by well-meaning restorers centuries ago. Paste that's turning acid, eating away at the page. Mario Tiburzi seldom reads what he's repairing. It's too distracting, especially if the writer happens to be Michelangelo.
When I work on the Michelangelo papers, it was the same that to work on Mickey Mouse paper.
Mickey Mouse, yeah?
A difficult job may take months or even years, but consider the result.
1,000 years after us, I hope that they can read the same thing that we are reading now.
The library's most valued documents go back almost 2,000 years, nearly to the time of St. Peter, the first pope whose tomb lies beneath the basilica that bears his name.
Petru Episcopu.
His letters to the faithful make up two books of the New Testament. And here is a copy, written in Greek on papyrus, by one of Peter's disciples around the year 200, a mere century or so after his death.
In the beginning, it was the Word, and the Word was God.
And from the same period, the Gospel of Luke and part of the Gospel of John, also written on papyrus, venerated by early Christians in Egypt, preserved for centuries in a desert monastery.
The bread for today give us.
They contain the oldest known copy of the Lord's Prayer, so fragile we were only allowed to see replicas.
That great treasure of papyrus, I think, is the most important treasure of Christianity.
With our tour nearly over, it seemed as if the library's collection had come to life in the streets of the Eternal City. The centurions and crusaders, the centuries of faith and folly, time present and time past. Leaving the library, we thought, there's something almost magical to be immersed in this place, to breathe the air and touch the hand of history.
It's not easy getting cameras into the Vatican Library. Learn how we did it at 60MinutesOvertime.com, sponsored by Pfizer.
60 Minutes, coming up after this short break.
Your customers are your most valuable asset. So if you run a business that stores customer data, that is, personally identifiable information, including credit cards and social security numbers, you have to protect it, especially if you want to stay in business. Barracuda Networks has more than 150,000 customers worldwide who trust our security and storage solutions to do just that. Keep them open for business. Reclaim your network. Visit barracuda.com/open to learn more.
Attention men, are you urinating often, waking at night to urinate? We want to send you a free bottle of Super Beta Prostate, made with a natural ingredient that supports healthy urine flow, bladder emptying, and is shown to reduce waking at night from the urge to urinate. You can try Super Beta Prostate free. Only pay shipping and handling. This free giveaway is available while supplies last. For details, just call 800-519-0814. That's 800-519-0814. Call 800-519-0814.
Now an update on still another story from Rome, which we called Saving History. In October, Morley Safer told us how Italy's fashion industry funds the preservation of the city's ancient buildings, including the Colosseum, something the Italian government is too broke and bureaucratic to do.
6 million tourists a year visit here, snapping selfies and posing with rent-a-gladiators who pass the time with cigarettes and cell phones. The place has survived fires and earthquakes over the centuries. Now there's a new crisis, finding the money to manage the crowds and keep up with basic maintenance.
The $35 million cleanup is funded by the CEO of Todd's, the leather goods company. The Trevi Fountain is being repaired by the heir of the House of Findi, and now the Italian bank UniCredit will spend $17.5 million to restore Verona's Roman amphitheater, the Arena. I'm Scott Pelley. We'll be back next in 2015 with another edition of 60 Minutes.
CBS Monday.
Wheels up in 30.
The missions are classified.
Where to go?
The team is qualified.
The best of the best.
The suspects identified.
I need to know where this man is.
And the viewers.
My kind of town.
Satisfied.
Just doing what we do.
Catch NCIS Los Angeles, CBS Monday.
You're not going to believe this.
NCIS is now the most watched drama in the world.
Fantastic.
Only one show rules with viewers.
Nice.
And only one agent makes the rules.
Rule number 8, never take anything for granted.
Rule 38, your case, you're late.
Rule number 11, when the job is done, walk away.
NCIS, CBS Tuesday. CBS News, original reporting.